you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Tom Curran's Patriots Talk podcast. I'm Tom Curran. We are happy to have you here. The Senator Phil Perry will be alongside in just a minute or two. Obviously, we have the final two set for the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 54. But as you know, we're a little bit Patriot-centric here. So in today's podcast, we're going to focus on the way things unfolded for the New England Patriots the last time they were ushered from the playoffs during Wild Card Weekend. Back in 2009, we're going to compare the way the team looked then at the end of the first decade of dominance and how they prepped themselves for the second decade of dominance and how well stocked they are to rebuild for, get this, a third decade of dominance. Can they pull it off? We're going to get under the hood and let you know right here on the Patriots Talk Podcast.
Adam Vinatieri, move to the 40, this is time. Champion, and there ain't nothing you can do about it.
All right, you got Chiefs, you got Niners, you got a ton to get to. I'm going to be down in Miami next week, along with Phil Perry, along with Adam Hart, along with John Henry. It's a cast of four. Okay, Ryan Preventure, the pod father, is not going to be going with us. Sorry, bud. He is alongside, though, at the left hand of the Podfather. But enough about that. That's just preparing you for next week. We will be down there. And virtually every day we're going to be getting you a pod from Miami because the Patriots, even though they're not in the game, of course, are always front and center on everybody's lips. And there's a pretty big free agent name that's out there who happens to belong to the New England Patriots for another month and a half. But enough about that. Let's get to the nitty-gritty of the 2009 Patriots. And the reason this is pertinent is, as I mentioned at the top, the last time the Patriots were ushered from the playoffs this quickly, they had to reboot and rebuild and revamp. I wrote a story, you can find it on NBCSportsBoston.com, about what led to that team going from 2007, 16-0 in the regular season, 18-1 overall, to in 2009, a 10-6 team. And as you look back, so much of that had to do with culture, attitude, leadership, change. You can only sustain for so long. Players get older. Guys get new jobs. Voices wear thin. The 2009 Patriots, before the season began, said goodbye to Teddy Bruschi, Mike Vrabel, Rodney Harrison, and Richard Seymour. Also, Josh McDaniels took the head coaching job with the Denver Broncos. So there went your offensive coordinator who helped author the undefeated season, record-setting season in 2007, and also helped Matt Cassel develop to the point where he was a quarterback who could lead the team to an 11-5 season despite barely playing at all in college. So all those things were afoot. Additionally, though, there was a leadership void that was created. Tom Brady had been down in 2008 because of the ACL, and when he came back, he was getting his feet wet. The loudest voice, really, especially for the defense at that point, was Adalis Thomas. And the players that were brought in around Adalis Thomas were other veterans, well-established ones, guys who were not used to the authoritarian rule of the Patriots, Derek Burgess, Sean Springs among them. Not bad guys, just not used to the way things were done here. In Adalis Thomas, though, you had very much a guy who would push back, a guy who would question Bill Belichick, eye roll about the things the Patriots did. Gerard Mayo was made a captain that year. He's talked about it on this podcast before, how Bill Belichick tabbed him as a captain in his second year in the league and sent him out for the coin flip. And he didn't even know which way to say which end the Patriots wanted to defend. He had to ask Bill three times from the 50. Which end? Which end again? So into that void you had less maturity, less lockstep following of Bill Belichick's way of doing things, and more pushback. I remember, by way of explaining what I'm talking about, at that point I had been at NBCSports.com, and I came back in November of that year to work for Comcast at the time. Had still been in the Patriots locker room a lot, but I was in there a little bit more suddenly because I was back on the beat full time. And I remember that the locker room just looked like study hall. It was kind of chaotic. Just hooting and hollering and guys running around. And it just wasn't, you know, you'd be talking to one guy and other guys would be chirping while you were talking to him. It was totally different. And I said to Tom Brady at one point, I said, this place seems a lot different than it was a couple of years ago. He just looked at me and goes, we're very, very young. Another anecdote. It was from November of 2009, and the Patriots had just beaten the New York Jets 31-14. I'm in the locker room, and Brandon McGowan, who was a young safety, tough player, hard-hitting player, certainly one of the louder guys in there, he set his sights on Mark LaVore, offensive tackle. Now, LaVore had delivered a block in that game on a Jets defensive back, obliterated him on a screen. And McGowan, in full view of the media, full view of his teammates, looks at LaVore and says, Mark, actually he didn't say it like that, said, hey, what the bleep are you doing blocking someone like that? That kind of shit is going to come back on us. I don't have the quote exactly right, but basically he called LaVore out for delivering a block on a Jets player that obliterated him, making it sound like the Patriots' defensive backs were going to have to pay for that. Didn't say it on the side, didn't say it on a meeting, didn't say it in the showers, didn't say it in the training room. Said it while the players were still in uniform walking through the locker room after the game. Darius Butler was standing near him. I believe he was a rookie at the time in 09. Basically said, yeah, what are you doing? And I said to LaVore, I said, is he yelling at you because you blocked somebody? Apparently so. So that's what we're looking at. And that's why 1 week later when the Patriots lost to the New Orleans Saints 38-17 on the road, if you watched A Football Life, the one that was done with Bill Belichick from that 2009 season, you'll see him standing on the sidelines with Brady. And at that point, the Patriots had dropped to 7-4. They had lost the 4th-and-2 game, probably their best played game of the year. And Belichick said to Brady, boy, I tell you, we got a long way to go. This is a quote. Played it back last night just to make sure. We got a long way to go. We just have no mental toughness. We go on the road, no mental toughness. We can't play the game the way we need to play it. I just can't get this team to play the way we need to play. I just can't do it. So frustrating. And when you look back at that team, a lot of it, again, was traceable to the fact that they had gone through a massive amount of turnover. And with it went that institutional knowledge of how to be mentally tough. Additionally, the way the team was put together on the field mattered. That Patriots team led the NFL in points per game, 26.3. But they had a 59-0 win over the Titans, and they had a 35-7 win over the Bucks in London. They had a 35-7 win over the Jaguars, punctuated by a drive at the end of the game when Bill Belichick lost his mind because Patriots players were dancing on the field in the midst of a 5-play drive that the Jaguars used to break the Patriots shutout, which was attributable to the fact that this team was not able to maintain focus. So on defense, that's where the focus was a problem. They played well in spurts. They got in with a good team and they had trouble, i.e. New Orleans, i.e. Indianapolis. They had plenty of talent, but there were occasions when they would just go to sleep. Offensively, they had become well overly reliant on Moss and Welker. The two combined, get this, guys, for 2,612 receiving yards. Okay, 1,300 apiece, basically. 206 catches between them, 103 apiece. Actually, it's 123 for Welker, 83 for Moss. Tight end position, similar to this past year, was underrepresented. 43 catches for Ben Watson and Chris Baker. Julian Edelman, Kevin Falk had 37 catches. The running game behind Lawrence Maroney, 194 carries, 757 yards. It was Falk, Sammy Morris, and Fred Taylor behind that. Bill O'Brien was in his first year as offensive coordinator. So when the Patriots got to the playoffs and they had lost Welker in the final regular season game, Belichick knew, having said before that final regular season game, we can't afford to get Moss or Welker hurt, that they were in for it. And they were. They lose 33-14 to the Baltimore Ravens. It's 24-0 before the end of the first quarter. Patriots got swept out of the playoffs. But as they left that field, as they checked out of their lockers and moved on, what did the team look like? And that's what's relevant to 2019. And that's why I went through that long preamble, because if you look at things culturally now compared to 2009, it's far different. And in a way, let's start with that. Culturally, the Patriots have maintained what they built early in the 2000s, what they lost a little bit, maybe from 08 through 13, 12. And they've got solid, solid players. They have the McCourties. They have Chung. They have Matt Slater. They have Hightower, who's played for Nick Saban and Bill Belichick since he was 17 years old. They have Jamie Collins, who grew up in the system, came back and plays a certain way now, having, in his words, matured. Lawrence Guy, full-on professional. You know, the pushback that was present on that team, these guys wouldn't think of it. Nobody on the offense. I mean, David Andrews, Shaq Mason, Isaiah Wynn, Joe Tooney. I mean, Bill says, go poop in the corner. They say, how high? I guess the only pushback really came from Brady and Gronkowski. And Gronkowski's gone, and Brady is kind of a little bit on the outs, as we've noticed. So culturally, the Patriots are intact. Age and talent-wise, let's look back at that 2009 team. We talked last week about the 312 days, approximately, the Patriots lost over the last decade because of their success to extra work. Well, now the entire unit, coaching staff, Belichick, personnel, executives, are down in Mobile, Alabama this week, at least as far as I know, pretty much everybody. And they're at the Senior Bowl. What are they looking at? Who are they talking about jettisoning? When the Patriots came back in 2010, Derek Burgess wasn't a Patriot anymore. Sean Springs was no longer a Patriot. Adalis Thomas was no longer a Patriot. Brandon McGowan was no longer a Patriot. The Patriots moved players out. And soon after the 2010 season began, when Randy Moss opened the 2010 season, with a lament about the fact that he wasn't under contract and that the Patriots hadn't treated him well and were hanging him out to dry. Well, within 3 weeks, Randy Moss was no longer a Patriot. So culturally, Bill Belichick attacked things. Belichick basically made the decision that if you don't like it here, you can go someplace else. If you're not going to be on the program, with the program, about football all the time, we're all set. We'll figure it out. And in figuring it out, the Patriots attacked the 2010 draft. In the first round, they took Devin McCourty. In the second round, they got Rob Gronkowski. With McCourty, they addressed leadership. They addressed the back end of their secondary, partnering him with a second-round pick from 2009, Patrick Chung, who would become one of the best and most versatile safeties of the decade, Chung would, with his ability to play all four downs, to cover tight ends, to play in the box in the running game, to cover in general. With McCourty, you got a guy who became absolutely the patrolman, security guard, safety officer, Secretary of Defense at the back of the team's defense, became the brain. He came in as a corner, though, and he was second-team All-Pro as a rookie. Gronkowski, of course, comes in, and after fits and starts, he makes an impact beginning after the Cleveland Browns game when he was an absolute mess and actually kind of cost the Patriots a loss on the road. Patriots bring in Jermaine Cunningham, linebacker who made an impact over a short period of time. Not great, but he did something. Brandon Spikes partnered with Mayo, 2008 first-round pick, in the second level of the defense. Spikes was a human walking ballistic missile. Aaron Hernandez lasted with the team for 10, 11, and 12. He was a great, 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 great football player who did things that nobody else has been able to do for this team. Go back to the 2009 draft now. They get Patrick Chung with the first of four second-round picks. They also get Darius Butler, who would see plenty of time at cornerback, and Sebastian Vollmer, longtime right tackle. They also get Rich Ornberger, kind of a valuable swing offensive lineman. They get Myron Pryor, played a little bit. They get Julian Edelman, played more than a little bit. He's got 599 catches of 6,507 receiving yards, might be arguably the best receiver the Patriots have ever had. Randy Moss, Wes Welker, Stanley Morgan, they can all stand up, raise their hands, and say, you absolutely out of your mind? And I can say, I might be. 2008, how'd that draft look? Well, at the top, I already mentioned, they got Mayo. And at the bottom, they got Matthew Slater. 2011, New England Patriots followed up that 2010 draft with Nate Solder in the first round. Rashad Dowling was a big swing and a miss. But they got Shane Vereen, who helped them win a Super Bowl in 2014. Stephen Ridley, who was okay. And Marcus Cannon. I'm going to stop it right here at 2012. The Patriots, through the draft in 2012, added Chandler Jones and Dont'a Hightower in the first round, swung and missed on Tavon Wilson. Yeah, call it a foul tip. And brought aboard Nate Ebner. Still here. So that's the difference right now between 2010 and 2020. The Patriots cleaning up in the 08, 09, and 2010 drafts, and then continuing to in 11 and 12. We're going to get Phil in here now to look at the relative age of the Patriots. Back then, it was becoming a very young team. Brady was still in his prime, early 30s. And we're going to take a look at how the Patriots are built now and whether they have that staple and stable of players we were talking about. Hold for Phil. So the 2010 Patriots had a 10-6 season, Phil, as we bring you in. Hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. 10-6 for a team that had gone 16-0 2 years before and was on the precipice of perfection was a radical departure from what we were used to. 12-4 this year, losing to all the other good teams in the AFC, and being ushered out in the first. It's a radical departure. I just went through all the differences, Phil, between the 2009 team and what it looked like in 2010 and how well they had prepped themselves. You wrote a story, it's on NBCSports.com, comparing how the 09 off seasons looked compared to 2010. I just kind of detailed a lot of those draft picks from 08, 09, 10, 11. But you've looked at the age difference and some of the contractual aspects of the Patriots relative to 2009 and 2019. Let's let you loose to run around the room verbally for a while.
I love running around the room verbally. Well, yeah, I mean, you hit on it, and I know you got into just how often they hit in the draft, but I think that is what this comes down to. And in my piece, I sort of lay out there why the pressure is on for them to hit, not only in this 2020 draft where they have a dozen picks, they don't have a second rounder, but they do have 12 picks. They have 12 shots at the dartboard. And last year they had, I believe, 10, and nine guys are still with the team. And so these last couple of years, and even, you know, the year before that, they had a number of draft picks, because it's clear that they have told themselves, we need to get younger. We need to start hitting here if we want to sustain this success, because the draft is the lifeblood of any team that wants to prolong any level of success. And I would include the Patriots in that. You can go a couple of drafts without really hitting, Tom. And we saw that, you know, the 2018 Super Bowl is a great example. one of the oldest teams in the league. They went a couple of years with really low yield draft classes, and it didn't matter. They won a Super Bowl. They had a great quarterback when they needed him. They had a Hall of Fame tight end when they needed him. The defense was tremendous. We know how that story played out. But it's not really a sustainable plan. And when you look at whether it's the 09 reboot that we're talking about, we're really focused on here today, but you could even go back to the 2001 Bill Belichick reboot, where that mess wasn't Bill Belichick's, and that was a hell of a mess. You didn't know what you were doing at quarterback long-term, probably, even though Drew Bledsoe had a long, had a lengthy and expensive contract there. You had to totally reshape the cap.
And you also had to change culture.
And you had to change the culture. So some of those things, you know, in some senses, this one might be easier than that one, because you probably feel like if you're Bill Belichick, okay, I have a system in place. I have schemes that I like. I still have a lot of players that are under contract who are really important pieces of that culture. But those guys are mostly old. And if you don't start to put together some foundational pieces, whether it's Mayo and Slater in 08, Edelman, Vollmer and Chung in 09, McCourty and Gronk, Nate Solder, Hightower and Jones, like, you just haven't had those in recent years, and it's going to make this reboot, unless you start to hit in the draft, harder than that one.
I'm going to run through this one more time, and I did do it, but it, as I'm writing these down, as we're doing this, it is astonishing, because I think I have upwards of 30 names from 2008 through 2012 who were contributing players for the Patriots, and I'm not even talking a little contributing. I mean, massive contributors, starting level players that they collected. It starts with Mayo in 08, then Slater. Then it goes Edelman, Vollmer, Butler, Chung. That's six players. Hernandez, Spikes, Cunningham, Gronk, Devin. That's another five players. That's 11. Cannon, Ridley, Vereen, Solder. You're up to 15. Ebner, Hightower, Jones. 18 players. Jones, Pro Bowl player. Hightower, Pro Bowl player. Ebner could be a Pro Bowler in his level. Solder, one of the better left tackles in the league for a spell. Cannon was at a point one of the best right tackles in the league. Devin, Pro Bowler. Gronk, all-time greatest tight end to play the game, which is good. Hernandez, decent. Then Maniac. Spikes, Maniac, but also somewhat decent, but not the same level of Maniac. Cunningham, couple good snaps. Chung, good player for a decade. Butler was a contributor. Vollmer, valuable. Edelman, Patriots Hall of Famer. Mayo, borderline Patriots Hall of Famer, Pro Bowl player. And Slater, Patriots Hall of Famer. I mean, that's 15 players, 11 of whom I would say are very valuable. And that's...
Yeah, and Tom,
go ahead, babe.
No, yeah, you can even if you just want to narrow it down to just sort of the high-level guys, right? I mean, the guys that you would really consider cornerstones of championship teams in one regard or another. You look at 08 to 11 and just look at those seasons. So like while those players are still young, so 2008 to 2011, a lot of those guys stay for a decade. But if you just keep it in those years, the guys you drafted in those years, so this is the Mayo, Slater, Vollmer, Chung, McCourty, Gronk, Solder, core, I would call it.
Mm-hmm.
You had in those years, while they were all still young, four Pro Bowls represented there in that group. You had three first team All Pros, and you had two second team All Pros through the 2011 season. And you mentioned guys like Solder, you know, was a key part of a Super Bowl team in 2011. He started 13 games on the offensive line as a rookie. Compare that to, and that's four draft classes, right? 08 through 11.
Mm-hmm.
Compare that to the four draft classes 2015 through 2018. So we have at least two seasons of information on these guys. Let's leave 2019 out of it because too soon to tell on a lot of those players. 2015 through 2018, you had no awards. Zero.
I will go through some of those players since I got them. We have Malcolm Brown, Jordan Richards, Geno Grissom, Trey Flowers, very good player. Trey Jackson, Shaq Mason, Joe Cardona, on and on. Flowers, good, but gone. Mason, good. He
never won an award. I mean, correct. Like even Flowers, who made huge money, was never even a Pro Bowler.
Right.
Mason's never been a Pro Bowler, never been an All-Pro. Tooney just was named in 2019, so we're sort of adding on a year here to get an award on the board, but he was a second team All-Pro in 2019, and that's the extent of it. You have nobody left on the team from the 2016 draft class. You know, Tooney doesn't count against the roster anymore. You have right. Landon Robinson, Ted Karras. Those guys are all free agents. You have two players from the 2015 draft class in Mason and Cardona.
Mm-hmm.
You have basically no starting level players from the 2017 draft, which had four players drafted. And you have what I think is a quality left tackle in the 2018 draft, but he's missed three quarters of his first two seasons here.
Mm-hmm.
Sony Michel and Juwan Bentley, who I would say after 2 years are kind of looking like average players. If you want to call Michelle an above average player with a good offensive line, that probably is what he is, but mm-hmm. it's a tough position in general. Anyway, the you know, long story short, you haven't hit with quality picks in a long time for guys that have become really core pieces of your franchise, and it just is such a contrast to that 2009 reboot where you had guys that were here for a long time that were really good players that made it on the second contracts and that helped you extend the dynasty
right.
from that early aught period into the period that feels like it's kind of coming to an end right now.
What's daunting as well is that they haven't drafted guys who could supplant the players who needed to be supplanted because of the circle of NFL life. They took sure. Jordan Richards, ostensibly, I would think, to be the next Patrick Chung. I'm sure that he's doing well in whatever financial institution he's probably working. But he's not an NFL player. Malcolm Brown is a Saint, correct? Yeah, he's a
yes.
Saint. So
yes.
He doesn't play here anymore. They haven't done well at the top of the draft. You have those two players who were top of the draft, first and second round players. Next second round player was Cyrus Jones. He plays for the Baltimore Ravens. Still helping the Patriots as of earlier this year when he fumbled a punt, but not helping New England on a weekly basis. 2017 draft, God bless him. Derek Rivers, Antonio Garcia, Dietrich Wise, and Connor McDermott. Patriots had a pick confiscated, but it's almost like they didn't draft that year. And then, as you mentioned, the 18 and 19 drafts. We'll see how N'Keal Harry works out. We'll see if Jacoby Myers turns into a player. I mean, Jonathan Jones has turned into a player. We don't need to be unfair, and we won't be unfair about it. The Patriots have, in other fashions, unearthed players, whether it's Malcolm Butler in the past, Jonathan Jones, J.C. Jackson. These are guys who have contributed. Jacoby Myers, I don't think, is destined for long-term contributions as an undrafted guy. Maybe Jarrett Stidham's going to be good. Maybe somebody will blow the dust off Yalta Froholt and Yodny Kajust after this year. And they'll turn into good players. Jake Bailey is going to be punting longer than Zoltan Mesko was.
Right.
But
and so you're right. Like, there are a lot of guys that you can add there. But and I think you do make a good point, Tom. Like, part of the reason some of these guys haven't stayed or hit is, I mean, do you punish the Patriots for, you know, taking Edelman in the, you know, in the seventh round in 2009 mm-hmm. and having him be such a good player that no one was able to beat him out?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily fair.
I mean, you went
and
found
in part because their old players are good.
Yeah, you went and found Danny Shelton for a song so you could get rid of Malcolm Butler. You found something to fix it. But still, those cornerstone players, I think, that you want to build around to be young and to be a vibrant team going forward, we're not seeing them come into the system necessarily. Chase Winovich, the best rookie from this year. N'Keal Harry, the jury, is probably going to be out for a while on him. And then again, you have the quarterback is going to be an issue.
It's remarkable when you look at it, Tom. They have more, just to, you know, beat a dead horse here, but they have more players from the 2009 draft class, starting caliber players, I would call them. They have more starting caliber players from the 2009 draft class that are under contract with this team than they do from 2015, 2016 and 2017 combined. So you're leaving out Joe Cardona and Dietrich Wise, who are, you know, role guys, and they're still under contract. Shaq Mason's a starting level player, but you still have Patrick Chung and you have Julian Edelman, and they're probably going to start for you next year. And they are in the league for more than a decade now. And it's just sort of an indication. I mean, you can look at the cap numbers too, which you referenced off the top. I mean, in 2018, they win a Super Bowl, but only one team that year had fewer cap dollars committed to players on rookie contracts. So they're a decidedly veteran team. And I think that's purposefully done by Bill Belichick in part, because you're trading picks for known commodities and veteran players, things that we've talked about when it comes to roster building strategy in the past. But is that sustainable? Because last year it was more of the same. They went into the season with the oldest 53-man roster coming out of camp. They had the oldest starting defense in the NFL, and it started out great. And no team in the league had fewer players on rookie contracts than the Patriots did last year. They only had 24 players on rookie contracts. It's by far the fewest in the NFL. And even next year, Tom, you can spin it forward to next year. Brady, McCourty, Van Noy, Collins, all veteran guys that are not under contract for 2020, and still the Patriots are going to, it looks like, be one of the oldest teams in the league. No team right now in the NFL has fewer players under contract on rookie contracts than the Patriots. And the percentage of their roster right now that is made up of players on rookie deals is just over half, which is far and away the fewest or the lowest percentage in the NFL. So even if you get younger at quarterback and outside linebacker and some of these other positions, you're still going to be, because of the way you've built for the last several years now, you have put yourself in a position to be a very veteran team. And at what point does Bill Belichick look at it and say, this isn't great for our long-term future? Best for us now to probably hit the reset button, try to get younger where we can, get a little bit more flexible in terms of our salary cap so that we can sort of restart here and feel like we have a fresh page with which to work and we're not worrying about cap hits for older players in 2021 and 2022 that are going to hinder us in terms of roster building.
Yeah, part of the reboot in 2010, too, was important and interesting because the Patriots changed their offensive personality, having moved away from tight ends. They drafted two of them. Patriots went without tight ends this past year, virtually, and it hurt. It hurt because the wide receivers didn't step up via injury or bad management or guys saying, I'm not coming. We're getting kicked off the team. But it didn't work out, and the fact that there wasn't a tight end to complement almost has the Patriots kind of back where they were. That is certainly a problem that the Patriots could have addressed over the last few drafts. Fast forward, though, to these drafts, Phil, there's 12 picks the Patriots have in 2020. But they have their own first-round pick, 23rd overall. Then they don't have a second because of the Mohamed Sanu deal. Then they have two compensatory picks that we're going to project for the third round for Trey Flowers and Trent Brown. Then they have a fourth, no fifth, and then a bevy of sixth and seventh rounders. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven picks in the sixth and seventh round, which I'm sure will be packaged, but, you know, you can never promise it. Oh, goody, you mean I get a seventh rounder? They'll have to turn it into a 2021 pick. So they're going to have to clean up, and they don't have, and they're not top-heavy in the top 60 players, are they?
No, they're not. I mean, they have one pick in the top probably 60 or so, it's looking like. I mean, they're going to have a couple of compensatory selections in the third round, but those are in the 90s. And they do have three third-round picks overall. And so they have shot. They have dart throws. You know, I think, like, the way I think about it, I really do think of them as dart throws. And when you're in the first round, you're 3 feet away, and you're trying to make sure you hit on something valuable, even if it's not a bullseye. And then with each round, you're moving farther and farther back. So, great, they have four, you know, seventh-round selections. But the reality is those are – you know, essentially players that are of the same caliber talent-wise as somebody you would get as an undrafted free agent. So you really can't depend, you know, it sounds like it's basically half a dozen. Is that what you, how many guys in the sixth and seventh round this year, Tom? I mean, it's
a
bunch.
That was a bunch, six or seven, I think.
And you just can't, you can't rely on hitting on those types, even if you do occasionally. So I applaud the draft in bulk strategy because, listen, all of these guys are crapshoots, and the numbers have shown, you know, in terms of hitting on Pro Bowl caliber guys or all pro caliber guys, everyone hits and misses essentially at the same rate. But in years like 2017, where you draft four guys, you give yourself no ammo with which to work. So they have ammo. They have ammo. I would still call it ammo from the 2019 class because we're still waiting on guys like Juwan Williams and N'Keal Harry, and maybe they'll hit on some of those guys. They have a bunch of players there, and they have numbers there to try to hit on, and they've done it another way. You know, undrafted free agency has been kind to them, and you mentioned a bunch of the guys that they've hit on there. So there is some reason for optimism, like that this thing can change, and it can change fast. It changed fast in 2010. I mean, you mentioned it. Like, you hit on two really good tight ends and one really good defensive player, and all of a sudden everything changes, and you have a better team. I know the season didn't end all that differently in terms of sort of an early playoff exit, but you have a better team, and if you set yourself up for success down the line. Tom, I do look at it though, and the one reason why this reboot looks like it will be much harder than the last one is the quarterback situation. Right. Because to me, I mean, Brady is obviously at an MVP level there. To me, they have to sort of know what they're going to do with Tom Brady. Like, I would say now, you know, like,
sure.
Or in the next month or so, if you wait until, and we've talked about this, but if you wait for him to field offers from other teams, and then you base your decision on Brady off of that, you're starting from behind, because then I would think you'll have to go seek out veteran help to figure that out if he's coming back, or you have to make that determination to kind of sit out that legal tampering period, March 16th and 17th, because you know you're not bringing Tom Brady back. Like, if they wait until that 2-day period there, which is incredibly important for every team, but if they wait till then, it's too late. And so I think they have to look at this saying to themselves, either we're drafting in bulk again, or we have a good feeling that we can bring Tom back on short money, and we'll trade a bunch of these picks, and we'll bring in more veterans, and we'll try the veteran thing one more time. And it's worth it because it'll give us a chance to really compete. I think those are the two sort of determinations. And I feel like they almost have to have that decision made already.
Yep.
Is that too strong?
No, it isn't, because they're going to have to strike while the iron's hot. And that's why, while there is relative silence on the Tom Brady front, and I'm guessing it will be, although we're going to have any number of nuggets drop that are treated as huge developments, I think the period of time between February 10th and March 10th will be when the Patriots come to a conclusion as to what they're going to do so that they can set a course. So they're going to have it decided before St. Patrick's Day. You're damn sure about that. And it.
Do you think?
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't have nothing.
Do you feel like the time off, and you've talked about this, we talked about it last week. Do you think the time off that they have now, you know, we see Albert Breer tweeting that Bill Belichick's at the Senior Bowl, which is a relative rarity. They don't typically send the coaches, or that many coaches at least, when they have long seasons. Will that have a tangible impact on how well they draft? Because they did draft really well in 2010, and they did draft really well in 2011. And those were years that ended early for them relative to other years. Are we looking at, just because Bill Belichick has more time on his hands, a draft that's going to be much more fruitful, or is that not giving enough credit to people in the college scouting ranks
who
work
on this
stuff all year round?
No, I mean, it's such a skeleton crew in the first place, and Belichick is going to do what Belichick is going to do when the draft day begins, regardless of what the scouts say and the personnel folks say, i.e. Jamie Collins. What's going to happen is, if you look at 2006, the Patriots, and 2005, they lost early, quote-unquote, in 05, 06, not early, but they said enough is enough, and they came back with guns blazing. 2009, ushered out early, came back with guns blazing. 2002, they're out early. They signed Colvin and Rodney Harrison. 2004 was Will Fork in the draft, but, 2009, again, as I said, they came back and came back hard. 2010, they had Nate Solder, they had a good draft that year. So they're not going to sit idly by. They will maximize their time, I'm guessing, because that's generally what they have done over the last 20 years. So I'm sure there's a plan in place,
question.
And it's going to be a hard, it's probably got some, if we were to peek inside the folder, I'm sure our eyebrows would raise. Rise.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And I do think it's when it's every, you know, all hands on deck, when it's that sort of approach in the offseason, I feel like you have, because we know some of these decisions are based on someone catching an extra few seconds of film of Malcolm Butler. Like, you know, like that's how some of these determinations, whether it's undrafted free agency or the draft, it feels like get made. And when you just have more man hours, when you have an entire coaching staff to augment what your scouting staff is already doing, I feel like you have a no stone left unturned situation on your hands, and you're just increasing the odds that you do hit on that dartboard. The other thing I wanted to mention, because, you know, we sort of highlighted the fact that they don't have a second round pick this year, and obviously they willingly parted with that one to get Mohamed Sanu. Do you feel like their willingness to part with that pick might indicate any sort of draft strategy we see this year? Because I look at it and I say, I don't think it's the strongest quarterback class ever. You know, Joe Burrow's at the top and Tua will be near the top and Justin Herbert will be in the first round somewhere. And Jordan Love looks like he could sneak into the first round because he's physically talented. But after that, you know, who knows? And I wonder if the Patriots, before they even made that Mohamed Sanu trade, they said to themselves, well, what are the odds we're taking a quarterback in the first couple rounds anyway? We could part with a second rounder. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really the position that you would want to be able to maneuver for in the situation that they're in. And do they feel like – is there a chance they feel like they have their guy in Stidham, and was their willingness to trade that pick maybe an indication of that?
My feeling is that those are – that's a – they went into the mall that day understanding that we're this far away. We need to do something to help our 2019 team. We're going to leave here with a wide receiver. Whatever we have to pay, we're going to pay because we need that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not relative to what's going to happen in the draft. They'll figure that out then. I think the Bill is pretty good at saying, you know what, this is what we need today. We have a flat tire. We're in the middle of the highway. We have to finish this. We have to get home. So we're going to do whatever we have to do. And if we have to pay a premium, we'll do it. And stunningly to me, and I think stunningly to them, Sanu might not be the answer. Phil, we've provided the people with a really good overview, I think, of where the team was and why it was able to reboot before, and the problems and issues and obstacles it faces in trying to do so now. Do you agree with me?
I do agree with you, and I really find this stuff interesting. I know for a lot of Patriots fans, it's not the most enjoyable thing to talk about because there's a lot of uncertainty, and maybe more uncertainty than they are used to. But I would say if you're a Patriots fan, you're a Bill Belichick fan, and if you're a Bill Belichick fan, you know he has rebooted not just once, not just the one time that we're focused on today, but really twice when he first came aboard here. And that I think there should be a level of confidence that this group is going to figure something out. And I think it's sort of exciting to track it as it happens. And I know not everyone will feel that way. And I know the reasons he was able to reboot the two times he did was in large part because he had the greatest quarterback ever with him.
100%.
But I do just feel like this is one of the most fascinating times to be a Patriots follower.
All right. Well, we're following it just along with everybody else, just as everyone else out there is following it. Phil, thank you very much. We will talk to you later in the week. Phil and I are going to be down in Miami, as I said. So bring the sunblock and get ready to do my back.
You have a shave?
I have shaved.
That's a prerequisite. You know that.
You know, there's no such thing as a hairy Irish guy. We're like baby little baby ferrets. We come out just little pink balls of skin. All right, Phil, that's going to do it. Goodbye.
Okay, bye.
All right, there goes Phil. Here goes me. We may circle back later in the week if there is anything pressing. If there's not, talk to you next week from Miami.
One, two, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.